and welcome to Vista Talks, interesting discussions with interesting people from all around the world. I am your host for today, Maria Roa, and I am delighted to be joined by Aneta Zapeta. Aneta is a machine translator specialist at Vista Tech. With more than 8 years of experience in machine translation within the localization industry, she possesses extensive expertise in various aspects of machine translation, including engine selection, data preparation, evaluation, testing, and maintenance. Her skills also encompass monitoring MT output and evolution, devising MT strategies, staying abreast of new industry developments in MT and AI, conducting training to share MT knowledge, developing MT-related tools and applications, and implementing MTPE scoring systems for evaluations. Aneta, you are very welcome to the show. Let's move on, as I have a number of areas I'd like to discuss with you today.
Hi, Maria. Thank you for inviting me on this podcast to talk a little bit about machine translation. And thank you for having me.
No, it is a pleasure for us. Well, I know you speak 6-7 languages, so I guess working in the localization industry came natural to you. But why machine translation? What did attract you to this specific area?
Yeah, I do speak a lot of languages, fortunately. I speak Macedonian because this is my native language, and I live for 13 years here in Poland. So I also speak Polish, English, and most of the Balkan languages, and some basic Czech. Balkan languages meaning Serbian, Croatian, Bulgarian, and so on. So knowing so much languages, so many languages, it did come naturally to me to work in the language industry because previously I was also working a long time as a literary translator, which also got me to be interested in learning a lot of new languages or technologies. So when the opportunity came for me to join in the localization industry, it only felt naturally to do so. So then I discovered, when I joined into the localization industry, I discovered how diversified the localization world is and how exciting it is to be a part of building a lot of interesting things in order to improve the industry and to take it a step further. So because I am and was very interested in the technical stuff and technical innovation, I always wanted to know how things work. So I also went into get more information on how MT works, because I started basically to get to know about MT by reading a lot from the articles on the internet, some scientific articles, and because I wanted to find out what the magic is behind the scenes, and I got to know more or less what the characteristic of MT is and what does it mean, what does it do. But what it attracted me was mostly the endless possibilities of getting all sorts of translation in just a matter of seconds, minutes, depending on the file size, but let's say that matter of seconds. And then I get more into the technical side, which was a plus, because then I got to learn what kind of models there were, what was the history behind it, how to customize them, how to maintain them, how to clean the data, how to evaluate it, and how to see how the progress goes into the MT. And then getting all this knowledge, I got the chance to incorporate it in the workflows in the companies where I worked, and then to share this knowledge with different people, no matter if they were vendors, the PMs, or if it's the client side. But the best or the main trait that I say for the MT area that I always say is the best one is that it's an area that is always moving forward. It's not a static one. So you don't get to do one thing and then repeat it all the time without any changes. And no, this is very dynamic environment because you need to stay on the top of development, what's going on in the industry, what's happening, what you can integrate. So this imposes more of an agility and creativity for you because you need to search new things and you need to incorporate new things so you can be on the top of the market. So, but also the other thing that I like for the MT is that you can get to see how MT evolves before your eyes. And you can see how it gets smarter and smarter. It's like seeing a child, you know, growing up, and it gets smarter, it gets more innovative. And considering the new large language models that we see today in the market, or using the AI, which is not a new thing, I need to say this for, because the NMT models that we use today, or from our providers, are in a sense condensed form of AI, because they are just a mix of statistical models and the AI. So that's why I said this specific area is very attractive, because it's very dynamic and it's not staying into one place. You need to be very, very agile. You need to be very, very curious on a lot of things happening in the industry.
Yeah, so you're talking about that dynamic part of machine translation, and you were also very dynamic too, because you started as a QA specialist,
yeah.
Then you went into MT engineer, and yeah. Now you're a machine specialist at Vista Tech. So you kept moving too. Tell us a little bit about your new role here at Vista Tech. What is that you do?
Yeah, I did start. I mean, in the localization industry, I just started as a QA specialist because I was providing language quality services at the beginning. But then, as I said, I found a new field to research, the MT field. So I joined in as an MT engineer. Mind that in that time, I was very into software testing. I mean, the traditional software testing and also linguistic software testing, because back at the time, depending on the client needs. And then I went into learning some programming languages, because, and I still am, because I'm very interested in that type of things. So I started as an MT engineer, and I started, as I said, from the technical side, like cleaning the data, maintaining the engines, because back then it was the statistical, and NMT was entering slowly in the industry, and then evaluating them, checking the quality on the certain types of content and specialization, and then incorporate that MT into the production workflow. And I was also able to train people on this specific area, but the outside of the post editors, the vendors, but also the inside, the PMs. But I need to say that back then, when I was starting, it was a little bit challenging, because there was a very big reluctance from people, because they were not used to MT. It was something new. And incorporating this kind of thing, like MT in the workflow, it meant for them to readjust. And it took some time. But most of all, it took some time for the post editors or the vendors to accept it. But also, I was, as an engineer, I was also implementing some improvements, like creating a cleaning app for MT to be cleaned before the post editors would start working on it. As I further went into the technical stuff, I could develop some apps with my knowledge that I have with programming languages, and then integrating it in the TMS, because in one occasion I was a part of the development team where we developed an app for automated evaluation for MT with having a reference, and then we needed to integrate it in the TMS. But I joined Vista Tech last year as an MT specialist, and I need to admit that I got into a very good technology team with people that are very helpful, and they're very good colleagues, which made it easy for me to fit in the team. So my role here in Vista Tech is to create the strategies for the clients on what is their need when they want to use MT, and advise the clients and the stakeholders on what would be the best fit for the specific content or specialization. Of course, saying this, it goes in all of this, a preparation for the pilots for evaluation of MT, because you cannot go and say, okay, we can use MT and then go with it. You need to prepare some evaluation to see if the MT output for the specific content of the client is good, or should we use the MT providers that are on the market, and is that quality good enough, or should we do some more tailored approach, meaning that to customize a model or not. So this is part of my role, and also part of my role is to evaluate those empty outputs, meaning that I need to evaluate using some automated metrics, but also using human evaluation or getting the human into the loop to back up our findings that we do with the automated metrics. Being this said, I also check the technical side if we have connection with the platform that the client wants to use, or the client wants to use some empty provider that we don't use in our company, but we need to connect it somehow. So that's the technical side that I also need to check if it's connectable or not, or we can use it or not, what's the best approach or process to do. And latest things that come up with the LLM and AI was that I was also doing a research or testing for using the LLM and the AI for the empty related tasks. Whether it would be for, I don't know, evaluating the empty output or for translation or for doing an automated post editing. So this is also part of my role. And I also have the freedom, thankfully, to create some apps, desktop apps, if I need for, I don't know, measurement for the empty output. So this is, which is very fulfilling for me. It's like,
well, it sounds like that's a lot, but it is exciting. You're saying like you have to evaluate those clients, see if they do need machine translation or not. But if they do, and you consider they it would be useful for them to use this type of technology, which are the key factors that you consider when integrating machine translation technologies into companies' global content strategy, sorry. Which do you think are the potential benefits and risks for companies?
I mean, when you try to incorporate machine translation into your global content strategy, you should be getting some key factors into account. And to be realistic, empty these days can translate mostly anything. I mean, it's really improved, and mostly you can do anything with it. But what you need to do, think, when you do incorporate this or integrate MT, is to carefully plan and take into account some of the minuses that may come up into integrating this. So first of all, I will say the benefits that you will get from the MT, and this is known in the industry. The first thing is that you have a fast turnaround time. You increase the time to get the project to the final stage or to the client, which means you get the translation in a matter of minutes. You don't wait for it to be done in 10 days. You have like a couple of minutes and you have the whole file of, I don't know, 30,000 words, and you have it there. The other thing is that you can increase the productivity. The post editors will process twice as more words by post editing than translating from scratch, and this is a known fact. So if they are working, I don't know, 300 words per hour, they will work, let's say, 550 or 600 words per hour. I'm setting an example. It doesn't have to be like a standard, but let's say for the sake of this case, you will increase that productivity. And mind that those post editors, the more they work, they get more used to the empty output. So it means that they will know what to expect, what errors that they should expect from the empty, and they will know how to approach them, and then it leads to working faster. The third thing is that I think that everyone is mostly interested is in the cost saving. Mm-hmm. You will be having the cost savings by reducing the need for the human translation and improving the translation consistency, but you will have that cost reduced, because the rate that you will pay is not going to be the same as for translation. But there is always two sides of the medal. You know, there is a good side, but there is also some side that you need to take into account, and the risk components. So the first and foremost, what you need to have if you want to use MT is to have the security issues resolved, meaning that you need to have MT providers that guarantee confidentiality. Since the LSP or Vista Tech, we're working with a content that is NDA'd, So this is a must. You need to choose to integrate empty solution in the company that will guarantee you that your data that you upload to train the empty, or even for translating the file with the baseline or the generic models that they have, is guaranteed that your data is not going to leak anywhere else. It's only yours, and it's not going to be shared with anyone else outside that perimeter. The next thing that you need to think about is if empty is a good fit for the content, meaning that it will, if you have some editorial marketing stuff or something that has more metaphorical part inside, empty will not be the best choice. So to say, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's not that it's not going to be giving you any output, it will. But it's not going to be the quality you would look for in the usual content that you do with MT. Meaning that the MT, the machine, is not going to catch the nuances of those metaphoric stuff or idiomatic stuff as human would. So the other step is then to take into account the type of file format you will use it on. Because for Word files, PDFs, I mean, you know that it will segment and it will be a whole sentence. But for some other formats like SRT files, the SRT can influence the quality of the MT. What do I mean by this is that the SRT file by itself is structured by timestamps. So a single sentence traverses multiple lines and timestamps. So most TMSs have no option to join the timestamps into a single whole sentence. So you will get a partial sentence, which will be sent to the empty, and they will be emptied. But this means that you will get very low quality empty output, because empty will see every segment or every separate part of the sentence as a new sentence, so it will lose the context. And it will get you a lower, so to say, output, not the one that you expect. So that is why when, let's say, you intend to integrate empty for 80 projects, that is one thing you need to bear in mind, that you need to find some solution, and you need to pass this information to the client so that he knows that in order to use MT and get the most of it for his type of content, he will need to do some pre-processing before emptying it in order to obtain good empty quality. And then the last thing, is the language resources. Be aware that MT is not going to work for every language, because meaning here about the low resource languages. So MT will be better for languages that are commonly used, like, I don't know, Italian, Spanish. Spanish is really good for MT. I mean, MT has a lot of data in it, so sometimes you cannot even recognize that it's MT output in Spanish because it's that good. Opposing to the languages that are low resources or that are not usually used. So meaning that those engines or those models will not have sufficient data to give you a good output. I mean, good quality output. They would give you something, but it's not going to be the quality that you are used to. So you need to be aware of it. And then if you are not sure that MT will do a good job or you want to check it, it's always good to tell the client that you need to test it. You need to evaluate and send it to, using automated metrics, or send it to linguists to just see more or less what to expect.
Well, that was a super great answer. Thank you so much. I mean, we're almost running out of time, but I want to ask you at least two more questions that are really important for our audience. One of them is, what are the current challenges and opportunities in the field of machine translation, and how do you see them evolving in the future?
Okay. There is a lot of things to correct or fix. But we need to bear in mind that machine translation has made a significant progress in recent years, because there's some advances in the deep learning and neural networks that's working and makes the model be better and better.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenges for the MT, which we have, is the data quality availability, meaning that acquiring a high quality and diverse training data in various languages and domains, it's still a challenge. You cannot scrape this data from anywhere. And it's always this lack of sufficient data is always a problem in the performance of some of the machine translation model. The other one is the handling rare words or phrases, idioms, or translating some cultural and domain-specific content, because machine translation will struggle with rare words and phrases and idioms because he will not know.
Yeah.
He will not recognize it. It's just what it is. I mean, if you say an idiom or something that's, let's say, put your hair down, which means to relax, he will not understand that, and he will translate it to just put your head down.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But and also the coherence and the context, meaning that because it's neural network, he gets a lot of terminology inside, but it's not going to give you a unified terminology and hold the file, meaning that he will use what he finds inside his data set. And also the comprehension or the preserving context and coherence. So that's why we always advise or suggest from the clients not to give text with a very long, complicated sentences, because just as the human brain, MT is not able to, I mean, it's gonna process it, but it's gonna get lost in the translation. Because as I said, even for human mind, we don't comprehend complicated and long sentences, so we shouldn't expect the machine to do so. In some point of that long and complicated sentence, he will get lost. So that's why we always suggest that the size of the sentence should be like normal size, not to get more into like two or three rows of one sentence and then nested meanings inside.
And yeah, that's I used to work with machine translation like 3 years ago, and we also had the problem when there were like single words. So it's not like when there was like lots of content, but when there was enough context for them, because there are words that, like, for example, in Spanish, we have different words for it, but in English they don't, or in French they don't. So mm-hmm. like, for example, pendiente means earring in English, but it also means pending in English. So in Spanish, it is the same word. And it was pendiente, meaning like pending, and it kept translating it to pending. I mean, sorry, to earring. And I was like, no earrings here, no earrings, it's pending. So we had to keep checking everything. The same thing when it translated to French, we kept having to have the human factor there, you know, to like recheck everything. So it's if it has too long, but it also, if it doesn't have enough context, they don't know what they're translating. And
as I said, it should not be in the two extremes. It should be very one word, because it's not going to see the context. He doesn't know. Just his sound. I mean, he sees pending and he sees the earrings. That's it. I don't know what it's applying to. But you cannot go into the other extreme having two long sentences. So you need to be somewhere in between. He needs to have some kind of context to give you what you need.
Yeah.
And the also, fluency. I mean, you still battle with it, because there is still the empty output sounds like machine-like, you know. But I think this will improve, and that's what I wanted to tell you. I mean, I wanted to continue with saying this, that it will evolve, because we can see that it improves over time. So we expect to see further more improving the terms of translation quality, fluency. But integrating it now more with the artificial intelligence, I think that it will become more closely integrated with it, because we will enable the models to learn and adapt from user feedback and improve their performance over time. And there will also be, I think, multilingual and cross-lingual transfer, because machine translation models will increasingly leverage multilingual data and then transfer knowledge across languages. And this is the case with large language models, meaning that, for example, if you have training data for one language, let's say Spanish, because it's a large language model, this will also influence Portuguese and all the languages that are in the same language family in some degree. And also, I see an improvement for usage for future for MT, and we can see that they start doing it by using it in the real-time translation, in interpretation, they use it now for like in this moment interpretation on the conferences, and also as I said, translating like various things in very, very quick manner.
Right. And now, before we go, I have one last question. What role do you see artificial intelligence playing in the future of machine translation? And how do you think that might shape the industry's landscape?
It will for sure influence the machine translation landscape. It will shift it a little, but I don't think that it's going to do like anything. I mean, it will accompany, so to say, the NMT landscape. And as I already mentioned, because NMT we use now is a version of the AI, because it has an AI in it, but it will transform. And keep in mind that with introducing the large language models or the multimodal language models we have now, meaning that you can change text into picture or text to speech, speech to text, text to image, and back and forth. And you can see now picture into text or image into text with the latest Gemini from Google. You can see that it will change it with time. But for the time being, from our research we did, we can see that the NMT models are still superior over the big LLMs, because the NMT is trained on a specific data. So it gives a specific output in a specific way. But I think that the AI will influence it more and more in like improving the performance of the NMT. But I think that the AI more will be used around the NMT, meaning of used in other areas as, I don't know, automated post editing for the MT or improving of the TMs or cleaning the TMs. But as I said, maybe it will influence in the area of automated post editing, because then, you know, it will reduce the amount of errors to be corrected, which will increase the turnaround time, but it will increase also the efficiency and productivity. As I said, I think that this will help into enhance the translation quality, meaning that you will have more specific output. Language accessibility, so you will have more AI-powered machine translation will break the language barriers and make information communication more accessible for the global audience. So you will be enabling real-time translation of text, speech, images, you name it. This would mean that the clients will have access to more markets and more specialization there is in different languages. And also, I think that integration, the MT with the other technologies, this will, I mean, integrating it with let's say, natural language processing, or speech recognition or computer vision, it will enable the development of sophisticated applications that can, as I said, perform real-time translation for, I don't know, a whole document in just a second, not like segment by segment, and in content creation. I mean, we see that the AI helps a lot in the content creation, because in various languages, but bear in mind that even so, we will need still the human in the loop.
Yeah, we will.
So being that said, I mean, AI will help. We will reshape the industry, but I think it will be more as a supporting act on improving the MT, rather than we seeing AI as the solution for everything and just to exclude the human from the equation. And that's not going to happen, because we're not there yet.
Yeah, not yet. Well, thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge, Aneta. It was great having you giving us all these insights in machine translation. And well, that's the end of today's show with Aneta Zapeta. Please make sure to tune in again to see and or to listen to the next VistaTech show, where we will be discussing more interesting topics with interesting people from all around the world. Thank you, Aneta.
Thank you for having me.